Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
And this is the WWE Podcast for this Raw Review Tuesday, July 9th, 2019. Thank you, as always, for joining me on this show. And if you haven't checked out the website, by the way, please do, WWEpodcast.com. So if you don't have the app or you're just browsing on the internet on your PC, you can listen to me and also get a really good read from a lot of my contributors to the website on various topics, including Evolve, Lars Sullivan, Shane McMahon, just a lot of different topics. Check it out. I really would encourage you to do that. Raw last night. Overall, I think Raw was a step down from the week before. As much as people were talking about Raw with Lashley and Strowman, boy, they didn't follow up very well on that. And we didn't hear anything from Braun Strowman, and we also saw Bobby Lashley as if nothing had happened. I know that it was described to us that Braun Strowman had received multiple injuries, all this and that, and yet he's competing in a last man standing match on Sunday. So I know why we physically didn't see Braun Strowman, but there's no retort. There's nothing. We didn't get even a live via satellite, nothing from Braun Strowman, which was a bit disappointing to not hear from him. And conversely, we get Bobby Lashley out there like, you know, last week was just another week where, it's just another match I competed in. It's just another day at the office. So I'm going to come out here with no bandages, nothing. Yet I was transported to the hospital. I'm not following why that's the case. In one of the biggest stunts on Monday Night Raw, they got people talking. We're supposed to be invested in this. And Bobby Lashley comes out unscathed, completely unscathed. No neck brace, no, I don't even care if it's an elastic band, you know, the things that Cesaro wears religiously, anything to show that, you know, there was some damage inflicted on Bobby Lashley last week, and we got absolutely nothing. We've got no confirmation that Bobby Lashley received any kind of injury whatsoever. I mean, it doesn't have to be debilitating. Just give me something that shows the effects of that. And you can guarantee that even at next Monday, after the Extreme Rules pay-per-view, where people are going to be, you know, flying off ladders and you know, hitting each other with chairs and all kinds of stuff, that nobody will come out Monday night showing any kind of signs of wear and tear. I don't even care if Bobby Lashley walked to the ring. He just did his normal pose, beat up Rey Mysterio, a returning Rey Mysterio, which, boy, that, talk about pouring cold water on a reintroduction. I know that what they were going for was domination from Bobby. I get it. I know why they're doing it. Bobby Lashley is a monster, as Braun Strowman is. But Rey Mysterio, one of the greatest of all time, is the sacrificial lamb for Bobby Lashley. They couldn't have found somebody else. Please, somebody, anybody but Rey Mysterio, who needs something behind him right now, who inexplicably just gave his championship away to Samoa Joe before he left and comes back from an injury sooner than expected. And the fans are excited to see him. He's a legend. And what happens? Bobby Lashley just runs him over. I'm not understanding that. I know what Bobby, again, I know the goal here is to make Bobby look strong for Strowman, but it didn't have to be Ray. I'm not following. Okay. Another interesting development was the Maria Kanellis and Mike Kanellis backstage follow-up to last week of Maria saying she's pregnant. And then I think the most interesting part of this is Maria alluding to that Mike may not be the father. And that, well, I mean, we're all assuming that she might have cheated on him. And now we're going to get the follow-up to that. So it continues to evolve in a way that I'm interested. I said this last week, and I will say it again because I think it's worth noting that Maria has a lot to offer here. She's not going to be wrestling. I'm fine with that. But she is very good on the mic. She's got a great delivery. She draws your eye to the screen. She doesn't feel like she's cutting a promo per se. I like Maria Kanellis on the mic. And right now she is spitting out gems with her husband that is apparently the father of her first child, but may not be for the second one. And Mike is just kind of being the slave to Maria Kanellis as the pregnant wife, asking for pickles and ice cream, you know, the generic craving of foods. And then she ends up still acting like a you-know-what towards him. And then basically admitting that he may not be the father. So I'm interested. I mean, I don't mind this little bit of drama in this crazy world of professional wrestling. It doesn't always have to be all about wrestling. And certainly doesn't have to be all about comedy. That was neither here. It was just good storytelling, good drama. And it just tells us, okay, this is the next chapter. Good. Clean cut. Let's go to the next one. It has me hooked. That's a good thing. So props to Maria Kanellis for keeping me engaged. And I don't know what the end game is here. If I were to guess, it would probably be that we will get the big reveal as to who the father is. I think that's going to be the hook of, well, if Mike's not the father, then who is? That's the question we all should be asking. And I don't know. I have no idea who they will go with as the possible father to Maria Kanellis' baby. But that's where they're headed. It's not a storyline that has not been used before. It's nothing that is, you know, earth-shattering or groundbreaking. But it's one that works. And when executed correctly, it works well. And right now it's just who impregnated Maria then? That's what we're all thinking, right? That's what we should be thinking. So props to the writers, props to Maria for execution. Another development that came out of the show was Ricochet getting himself beat down by the club again. After beating Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson in separate singles matches, we got AJ Styles as the head of the snake here, the ringleader, attacking Ricochet after that match with Karl Anderson after he beat Karl, and then beating him down and then beating him down again and again, with Ricochet refusing to stay down, as a good babyface does, and then gets the phenomenal forearm and AJ Styles stands tall. He never really addressed the audience, as I was waiting for him to do, other than to say backstage that, you know, I don't owe you or anybody here an explanation. Okay, we've heard that heel promo before. I don't know what sparked the turn. Maybe they're still formulating that, and the heels aren't supposed to give us the answers we want, but at the same time, in the interest of good storytelling, you still want to let in the audience on why exactly he decided to make this turn back to the dark side. I would like to know. I would think that it's because he felt like he hasn't been himself. He's been basically being a phony for the last couple of years. He's back to who he feels he should be in his true self. I mean, you could go with that storyline and it's believable. And putting him back with Karl Anderson and Luke Gallows is a positive, not just for Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson, but AJ Styles too. And whatever faction of babyfaces band themselves together to try to take this evil group down. So just it's storytelling 101. It's basics. I'm enjoying it. And, you know, I think Ricochet is clearly getting a rocket ship strapped to him right now. He's been on the main roster for, a couple of months, and he's already got the United States Championship. He's being put in prominent positions with one of the best in the world, no pun intended, with AJ Styles, and ends up beating him clean last week, and now he gets a championship defense match against AJ at Extreme Rules. So you can clearly see that Ricochet right now is in the management's eyes of, hey, let's see how far we can take this guy. The crowd reacts to him. He does cool moves. Let's see what we can do. How far can we take this? You know, we got to be careful, though, of the Roman Reigns syndrome where too much too soon. But at the same time, even Roman Reigns didn't take this path of winning a mid-tier title before he won the big one. So maybe they're learning. Maybe it's live and learn. But I like AJ Styles and Karl Anderson and Luke Gallows together. Again, this is a refreshed AJ Styles. Boy, did he need it. And boy, did Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows need it, who were just flopping out there in the middle of nowhere doing nothing, like literally nothing, other than occasional backstage skits. So it's good to see all three need each other right now. And Ricochet's the benefactor, obviously, too, because it's always about building new stars, as it should be, always about building new stars. And Ricochet is certainly one that management has on the radar right now. I'm hoping and crossing my fingers that management, a.k.a. Vince McMahon, doesn't get his flavor of the week itis, where, you know, he's been very famous for changing his mind last minute, loves somebody one week, doesn't like him the next, is on him for a month, then comes off and cools him off. There needs to be consistency. There needs to be follow through. There needs to be long-term planning. All three things that WWE has really slacked on lately over the last couple of years, to be honest, of creative. So to give Ricochet a fair shot, this should not be a one-and-done flash in the pan. This should be a long-term vision. Let's see what this guy's got. Let's put him in pressure situations. Let's put him on the mic. Let's give him personality, give him depth, and see what we have. Let's see what we truly, truly have with Ricochet. Okay, moving on to another storyline. Alexa Bliss, or Alexa Blass, if I'm saying it correctly, Nikki. Alexa Blass. I mean, look, I'm a Nikki Cross fan, and I'm going to get to a lot of things I like right now with her. But that boy, she has a thick accent. I don't dislike her accent, but at times it's so thick that the mispronunciation of names and words is distracting. But when she speaks, I listen. Like her thick accent is mesmerizing, but again, it takes away from the content at times because it's so damn thick. But I think Alexa and Nikki has gotten more exposure than I ever would have anticipated having been in this position with Alexa. Nikki Cross has really drawn my attention, and I think the attention of fans who look at her as kind of the innocent, naive one here, with Alexa, who we all know is the evil empress or evil goddess, as she would say, who is clearly taking advantage of Nikki's innocence and wanting to be a friend of Alexa. Again, it's the same analogy of the nerdy girl or kind of weird girl at school is trying to play with the popular kid. And when the popular kid or popular girl in this case gives you any kind of attention, she wants to ride it and ignore anybody else that says she's just using you and that, you know, once she's done with you, she's going to toss you aside like yesterday's trash, which is ultimately what we all believe is going to happen with Nikki. But Nikki right now is, again, when she just turned to this random nice girl backstage, I said, oh no, they're destroying her. Please stop. And while I think that the psychotic Nikki isn't gone, I don't know if we need her all the time. And I'm starting to get on board with this Nikki that's naive. If that psychotic end of her still exists and comes out when needed. And right now I think it is. Now, her interaction with Bayley is great. She's just refusing to believe that Alexa is using her. That's good, but at the same time, Bayley's not really benefiting with the crowd reactions that WWE and Bayley herself probably envisioned, because Nikki's not dislikable. Like, I don't dislike Nikki. She's just trying to make a friend. She's defending her friend, both admirable things. She's inherently likable. She doesn't look like her look is like kind of a common everyday look to her, which is a compliment because you can relate to somebody that looks a little more average, if you will. She's not dolled up and, you know, got the, you know, long legs and long blonde hair and, you know, puffy lips. She is kind of a little awkward, which makes her stand out, which makes you interested in her on top of her trying to just befriend somebody and defending her friend. And really, Nikki is the victim in all of this. So it's hard to hate Nikki. There's not a lot of psychological reasons to dislike Nikki. And at the same time, it's hard to cheer for Becky, Bayley, who is the one who needs to, you know, keep her championship and is fighting to keep that championship. But it's just kind of weird. But like right now, who I am paying attention to is not Alexa. And it's not Bayley. It's Nikki. Nikki, who is, again, she delivers her words nicely. She tries her best to not let the accent, you know, get in the way. But I think the accent's actually her asset, one of her assets. And she's the victim in all this. So I just don't see a reason why I should dislike Nikki. And Bailey is, I mean, she's doing what she can. She's, you know, she's trying to play the nice girl when she sees an opportunity. But at the same time, you know, she's also trying to retain her championship, even though she's being put in a 2-on-1 handicap match at Extreme Rules. She's also trying to enlighten Nikki that, hey, Alexa's using you. So there's that too. It's just an interesting dynamic. And I just don't know if Bailey's going to come out the real winner here, because Alexa and Nikki are not inherently dislikable characters. They don't, I mean, what even Alexa Bliss, I mean, she's using Nikki. That's the worst thing that she's doing, and she has a history of doing it. But Alexa Bliss is charming as well. So I don't think Bailey is going to get the hero's welcome at Extreme Rules, where people are going to go, you know, crazy for her. I really don't think so. So it's going to be interesting to hear the crowd reaction. I will say that. All right. Then we got more Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins on Raw. They stayed away from the awkward kind of cutesy stuff for the most part. That was nice to see. We got another mixed tag match. Again, mixed tag means men face the women, or excuse me, men face the men, women face the women. Yet after Zelina Vega was eliminated, it was okay for her to try to Hurricane Rana Seth, and for Lacey Evans to come and you know, trade punches with Becky Lynch. There's no disqualification here. What? Did I miss something? Because I really don't believe that this was a no disqualification match. And then furthermore, after the match was over and Andrade got the stomp for the victory, and Becky and Seth, you know, are 2-0 and sweep the tag team of Zelina Vega and Andrade, you got them walking up the ramp, Becky and Seth. And then you have Baron Corbin attack Seth from behind, ultimately to get punched in the face by Becky, who, you know, Baron can't retaliate because she's a woman. Don't forget that rule. It's just, I feel a rant coming, so I'm just going to take a breath and not do it. But you guys know how I feel about that. It's just BS. It's BS. The men cannot retaliate when the women attack them. Especially if a championship's on the line. You just go, oh, I'm going to cower here and let the woman beat up on me. I mean, that's what we do. Oh, it's nonsense. It's nonsense. And imagine had Baron retaliated against Becky. People would have lost their minds. People would have been like, oh my God, he struck a woman. Well, that would have got a lot of heat. But when you think about it, so you just let somebody hit you based on their gender? So if I say in today's world of you just say whatever gender you are, and apparently that's what you are. If I say to, you know, I'm walking down the street and I say to somebody, look, I identify as a woman, so I'm a woman because, you know, it's malleable. And then I hit somebody, and then someone tries to retaliate, and I say, I'm a woman, I'm a woman, I'm a woman. Can they not hit me? Does that grant me immediate immunity? Think about that. Just think about that. And also, here's an interesting question. How long is it going to be before we have an LGBTQ or trans? I should be more specific. The T of the LGBTQ. How long is it going to be before we have a trans star on the main roster, and not just on the main roster, but featured prominently, and it's open that they are a transgender individual? How long do you think it is? Not long. I really don't think we're that far off. So that should be quite the interesting dynamic when that happens. But we are headed in that direction. Let me tell you, we are. So I just don't know how that's all going to work. But that could be a conversation for a whole other day about a transgender individual who is openly transgender, and you have them on the roster competing for what championship? So could they compete for the WWE title? And then go, oh, well, now I identify as a woman. Okay, so I can also be women's champion? A lot of weird stuff that can happen here. A lot of weird stuff. So think about that. Think about that. Okay, moving on to more present day and not just conjecture. We also had the Viking Raiders against some enhancement talent, and guess who won, right? So I know what they're trying to do with the Viking Raiders. You know, again, they feel a lot like the Ascension. Weird, weird looking dudes, but we don't know their mission. And they looked like the ripoff of Legion of Doom. And what are they? Anything but ascending, let me tell you. They did anything but ascend. I think that was just kind of a ironic name to give them, considering they did anything in their career but ascend. So then we also got the continuation of Cesaro's evolution here. He faced Noé José. So José and Cesaro, they brawled out to ringside. And then when they went back to the ring, Cesaro took control and hit a gut wrench suplex on José. And then Cesaro hit the swing, and Cesaro won pretty damn clean with the sharpshooter. So they're trying to redefine Cesaro, I guess. Although being in the ring with Noé José is not exactly top-tier talent, considering where Noé José has been defined down as just a conga line leader. That's what he is. He's Adam Rose 2.0. That's all you need to know about Noé José at this point. It's maddening. Okay, the Street Profits are backstage. They cut a promo, and they hyped up the Sunday's Extreme Rules. As somebody who didn't follow the Street Profits in NXT, I know they're the NXT champion, tag team champions. You know how I know that? Not because I follow NXT, but because I see the tag belts around their waists. Okay, very admittedly, I do not follow NXT. Simply no time. Not because I don't want to, it's the time factor. So Street Profits are just kind of wacky, over-the-top, colorful characters. What are they? What's their mission? Just to be entertaining? Are they more worried about entertaining than they are competing? If so, I don't need you on my roster. I really don't. You know, from what I've heard and seen in the ring, they are certainly good performers. But right now, if this is the first time that you're seeing them on the main roster, you would think, who are these clowns? Oh, they're wacky, zany, and they say weird words, and they you know, they're colorful and loud and flamboyant and over the top. Well, that's wonderful, but I could use less of that on my roster, less of that on the TV show in general. Everything doesn't need to be so serious, but don't give me these guys that speak in half riddle, half normal language, and are just promoting a pay-per-view out loud while the camera's there and happens to be on. I don't know. I'm not giving them a thumbs down yet. I'm just kind of like a shaky thumbs in the middle, more of like, do something with them that's of substance. That's my spiel on the Street Profits. All right. Moving on to Drake Maverick. He came out from hiding in a big box with his championship, and his wife was there, and she complained about always having to deal with the 24/7 title. And Drake tells her there's a lot of room in that box and they should step inside and get it on. Oh my God. She wasn't having it, and Drake promises that he will show her he's a great husband and will give her the honeymoon she deserves after he defends her 24/7 championship. I'm just bullet point reading the review here. She says that they can consummate the marriage after that happens. And Drake yells in excitement that he's going to finally get it on with his wife. Oh, this segment was something else. Look, I'm enjoying Drake Maverick in this role. If that's really truly his wife, one word, mismatch. That's all I got to say about that. From what I'm hearing, that is truly his real wife. And I don't know how he dropped her and captured her and reeled her in. I really don't know. But it really, if this is indeed his true wife, this certainly suits the story that's going on. Because you have Drake Maverick, who really, in all sense of the word, should probably not be a champion of any kind. But if he's going to be one, 24/7 championship is the one to do. He's got an interesting personality, and you would never, ever picture him with a woman like her. Ever. but he is. And her being kind of this distant woman who is just put off by the fact that he is obsessed with having the 24/7 championship, it's a great dynamic. So, applause all the way around here. I like Drake Maverick as champion. R-Truth was getting a little bit stale, as entertaining as he is. It's nice to change it up, and Drake Maverick holding the belt is certainly a change of pace and one that I like. So I did like that as well. Another match here that I wanted to talk about was Shane McMahon and Drew McIntyre versus Roman Reigns and a mystery partner. So ended up being Gary, who was Roman Reigns' tag partner, unknowingly by Shane McMahon and Drew, was actually a wrestler, right? He surprised everyone when he hits a couple kicks to Shane's face, flies around, flops around, does a couple of handsprings, ultimately gets the Claymore kick, and Drew McIntyre gets the victory. And then Roman Reigns comes in and Superman punches Drew, and then the two run up the ramp. No appearance by Undertaker, which really shocked me. I figured that the go-home show, you would see the lights flicker with no action, maybe not even an actual appearance, but just trying to give us the presence of the Undertaker who is there, or maybe a message, pre-recorded. I don't care anything. I know the stipulation from Shane was, if the Undertaker interferes, he's out of the match. Well, I guess that was just a cover for, we don't have Undertaker this week. That was pretty much the cover for it. So fine, you explain it that way, I'll buy what you're selling. But at the same time, I wanted to see The Undertaker care about this match and have one last couple of lines, or just, have the smoke and the mirrors and the thunder and the lightning, but don't have him come out. I mean, I guess I expect a little bit more at the go-home show. But yes, Gary gets the pin. A couple of things that I have to say about this. Number one, I really hope that after this pay-per-view, this Drew McIntyre-Roman Reigns rivalry goes away for a while. And Roman Reigns could not seem more disinterested. Roman Reigns, as I've been saying this for a couple of months, has been sleepwalking since he returned. Seriously. I couldn't even hear him when he was speaking to Charlie backstage. It sounded like Charlie interrupted him from, a nap that he was taking in his locker room. Just so disinterested, too cool for school. I don't know. I don't really care who picks for my partner. I'm just going to go back to sleep, Charlie. Wake me up after performing a match. I mean, it felt like he was seriously sleeping. There's no fire. There's no passion. It's just as if, I don't know what the hell Roman's, what he's being instructed to do, or maybe that's how he's being booked, or maybe it's Roman just being himself. That, after maybe Vince said, Roman, just be yourself. And this is true Roman, the cool, calm, collected, too cool for school attitude. But if he's being booked this way on purpose, change it. If he's not excited, how am I supposed to be excited? It's just, I'm not following why. Why are they being so just wishy-washy with the Roman Reigns character, who main evented Raw and was the go-home match of the show for the go-home show of Raw to the pay-per-view? It didn't get me any more excited for the match. It really didn't. I am not as excited as I was about this match. It actually took away a little bit. So that's the one thing. The other thing is, here he goes ranting. Well, you know what? This is how you improve the product too. Do something else other than the Superman punch. Has it ever gotten a huge reaction? I mean, you could probably name on one hand how many times, and how many times it has actually won a match. And furthermore, it is the most obvious move coming ever. You have a lot of time from when Roman Reigns jumps in the air and you see his fist cocked to realize, he's about to do the Superman punch. Let me just kind of step aside or just duck. Nope. What do? We stand up and stare at his fist. That's what we do if we see the Superman punch coming. It's a cool visual. It creates a great t-shirt for a silhouette of me doing that move. Oh, it looks cool because when I do it, my hair is flying in the wind like a shampoo commercial. No. The Superman punch for me, number one, the name just makes me cringe. It makes me cringe. Did Superman ever actually do that move? Did he ever need to jump and do that move? Show me. I don't know. They just tried to make him, oh, well, Roman Reigns is a superhero to kids. So we're going to name that jump punch the Superman punch. It's hokey. The name of it, how it's done, how opponents don't see it coming. There are sometimes seconds that are lapsed from the time Roman leaves his feet to the time the opponent is just staring up, standing and looking at Roman jumping towards them with his fist cocked. Oh, he's just nitpicking. No, I'm not. You can't tell me that you haven't thought of that. Why is he doing that? I mean, it's not going to change. It's not going to change. I've accepted that it's not going to change. So I'm fine with it. I got bigger fish to fry, but I just wanted to point that out. That Roman's been sleepwalking and, you know, the Superman punch. Not my favorite. I don't mind the spear. Spear's cool. You know, but the Superman punch, I can do without. Because, oh, all right, let me just stop there. Shane McMahon also, look, I've sang Shane's praises over the last few weeks now. He's been a great heel and all that. I'm ready for this to move on too, though. I'm ready for the Shane and Drew show to move on. I get it, okay? I understand where they're going with this, but I'm ready for this. The Extreme Rules should wrap up a lot of things, I hope. I really hope it will. No more of Lacey Evans and Baron Corbin against Becky and Seth, and no more Drew and Shane versus Roman Reigns. I know that they're going to go for Drew and Taker at Mania, and that's fine, if that is indeed the plan. But this combination is not doing anyone any favors. We also have seen it a number of times. Roman Reigns actually lost to Shane McMahon, looked like crap. I mean, I'll be honest with you, he looked like a fool for losing to Shane McMahon the way he did at the last pay-per-view. It just was not my favorite. I'll just put it that way. So things should be wrapped up, and I really hope that they are. So, all right. Well, speaking of wrapping things up, that's what I'm going to do with this show. Tomorrow, I'll be back with the SmackDown Live review, which should be interesting to say the least, as I see the headline of, and I didn't see it yet, because again, you guys know I watch it on delay, of Kevin Owens dropping a pipe bomb on the McMahons. So that should be a hell of an interesting take there. I'm very curious as to exactly what Kevin Owens said, but I'm sure you guys know already as I'm speaking, but I don't. So I'm going to go and tomorrow I'll be watching the Hulu version of Raw or SmackDown Live, and then I'll give you guys my report tomorrow night with the SmackDown Live review show. Then Thursday, of course, it's the usual bring on a co-host and let's talk about WWE Week in Review and Extreme Rules Prediction Show, a combo show for you guys. And I'm looking forward to that as well. So please follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast. I'm also on Instagram at WWE Podcast, Facebook, WWE Podcast, and all podcast apps. So guys, thank you so much for joining me. And as always, I'll talk to you next time.